NCTE's Mara Kiesling joins Becky next for April 7th, 2011. Welcome to the Rebecca Juro Show.
He will shed his last tear on his Fox News show sometime later this year.
Hear me. You know what I believe is coming.
Glenn Beck has he's announced he's transitioning from, I didn't catch the end of it, I don't know if he's male or female.
I don't know
what he's transitioning from.
I'm pretty sure that's not it.
Oh, would that be an improvement? Maybe not such an improvement.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? It's the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for tuning in. Tonight we got Mara Kiesling, who, of course, is the executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. And she and Lisa Moté, who is person who works on the Transgender Rights Project for the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, released a blog post this afternoon. It appeared at the task force blog. It also appeared on Blerico just about an hour ago, popped up on there. We're going to be talking to Mara about that because, you know, there's been a lot of questions about HB 235, some stuff that I've put out, some stuff other people have put out. There's some real fears around this bill. And, you know, some may be a little over the top, and others maybe not so much. Others, I think, are, you know, legitimate fears. So we're going to have Mara on. She's going to talk about these issues. We're going to clear some of these things up and get a real solid idea of exactly what is this bill entails and involves and what it doesn't. You know, and I think there are some real concerns there. This is something we've mentioned on the show before, but we haven't really gotten into it in detail. We haven't really dug into it. So we're going to do that tonight. And thanks for tuning in. Tell you, you know, it's so funny. Glenn Beck, we heard, of course, at the top of the show. I thought that was kind of humorous. They don't want to use the word fired, but apparently he's not going to be doing his Fox show starting very soon. We don't know exactly when he's going to be off the air, but it's going to be soon. I think Glenn Beck, first of all, let's not forget that Beck has good ratings. He has great ratings.
Oh.
But the problem with Beck is not that people don't watch. The problem is he can't get sponsors because,
boycotts.
He talks, and it's interesting because you started off with a clip which was obviously from The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yeah.
And O'Donnell made a good point the other night, is that Beck often talks that he believes that the end of the world is coming.
Yep.
Well, sponsors aren't too hip on that because, you know, if you think the end of the world is coming, what's the point of buying insurance? What's the point of buying a new car? What's the point of buying expensive new toys and other things like that if you think the end of the world is coming? So it's something, this is the content that Glenn Beck has is content that it's interesting to a certain segment of the listenership. But it's not very conducive to getting people to buy stuff. And, you know, it leads me to something else because it's part of the problem, I think, that we experience with MSNBC on the other side of the equation. I think that this is relevant, okay? One of the things you hear me complaining about all the time, you hear other people complaining about is that we never see or hear any coverage of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act on MSNBC. Never. The only time that this bill has ever even been mentioned on MSNBC, as far as I know, and I, you know, if I'm wrong on this, and, you know, if somebody else has heard this, I mean, I don't watch every MSNBC show every single day, so if you've heard and I'm mistaken, and you want to tell me I'm mistaken, please call me at 928-277-4921. You can call in. Mara Kiesling will be on at the bottom of the hour at 7:30 Eastern. But until then, the phone lines will be open. So, but the thing is you know, if I'm wrong on this, well, okay. But Enda, okay, the only time I have ever heard Enda mentioned was once. On the Rachel Maddow show, when Chris Hayes from The Nation was filling in, she was off that night, and Chris Hayes was filling in, and he had Ben Jealous, who's the president of the NAACP, on the show, and he mentioned it. Okay? I mean, it wasn't even Rachel Maddow. It was this, you know, the president of the NAACP. At least he has an idea, you know, that, you know, well, some people who are out of work are also gay, lesbian, bi, and trans. And, you know, I think that is really the point, is that what is the employment non-discrimination act focus on? Who does it help? It helps people who are unemployed, right? Well, unemployed people tend to buy less stuff. They tend to spend less money. Why? Because they're unemployed. So, you know, that's why you'll never see the Employment Non-Discrimination Act on Rachel Maddow or The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell or Ed Schultz or any of these shows, because, you know, it's not going to get you to buy more stuff, because unemployed people tend to hang on to their money a little bit more closely than most people. And I think that's really what it's about. I think you have to realize that MSNBC is not about giving you the news. It's not about, you know, being progressive. It's not about promoting progressive values. What it's about is making money for sponsors, so that their sponsors will then spend lots of money on advertising on MSNBC. It's a business. And if your particular topic doesn't seem to MSNBC or to, you know, whoever it happens to be of generating money, enough money, then, well, you know, too bad. We don't give a shit that you're unemployed. We don't care that there's 28 states in this country where you can be gay and lesbian and thrown out of your home or fired just because you're gay or lesbian, or the fact that, what is it now, 37 states, I think it is now, where you could still be fired from your job or thrown out of your home just for being transgender. Right? They don't give a shit about that. Why? Because unemployed people don't have a lot of money. They don't buy new cars. Unemployed people tend to hang on to their cash. And the fact is, and going back to Glenn Beck, the fact is a lot of people like to watch Glenn Beck, but sponsors don't want to advertise with Glenn Beck because they don't see it as a worthwhile investment. Because don't forget, for a show that highly rated, that's a lot of money to advertise with those folks. Okay, those spots cost a lot of money. As far as you and I, you know, and the average person, probably the average person listening to this show, that's a pile of money. And they're not going to make that investment unless they think they're going to get a return on that investment. And with Glenn Beck talking about the end of the world every 5 minutes, probably that's why, you know, he gets like survivalist, you know, organizations and gold sellers are the only ones who are willing to invest with this guy. Okay, because that's what it is. When you have a company that advertises with you, it's an investment. They are making a monetary investment by putting their ads on the air, with the presumption that by putting those ads on the air, they're going to get a return on that investment with customers who are watching those shows and then going out and buying their products. Well, if the statistics show that you're not getting that investment, if you're not getting that return back, well, people aren't going to advertise with you. Or if they think they make you look nutty or crazy or, you know, I mean, don't forget, how did they get rid of Dr. Laura? They, you know, a lot of companies said, you know what, this woman is a publicly acknowledged bigot, and we don't want to be associated with her. And that was how Dr. Laura lost her TV show. Remember Michael Savage? He was on the MSNBC for, I think it was 3 days, until he called a gay male caller a sausage eater live on the air. Well, sponsors don't want to be associated with that stuff, even if they don't support gay rights, even if they think, well, you know, hiring gays and hiring trans people is bad for business. They don't necessarily want to be associated with a show that's blatant about it, because that's bad for business, too. These days, people are voting on values, and people are, you know, not afraid to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable with your positions on these things. And so I'm going to buy my car, buy my my dinner, buy my whatever from somebody who I'm more comfortable with. People are doing that more and more. It's becoming more and more of a social issue. So I think we have to remember is taking a sip of my delicious coffee there. Yes, delicious coffee. But I think we have to remember that these people are not in it to perform a public service. They're not, these folks are not there to, you know, be progressive leaders or anything. They're not there for altruistic reasons. They're there to make money. That's what they're there for. And if they don't think that having transgender issues on their show is going to make them money, they're not going to do it. If they don't think that focusing on bills like the unemployment, like the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and other anti-discrimination laws is going to make their sponsors money, well, they're not going to do it. And why is that? Because just like with Glenn Beck, if Rachel Maddow covers stuff, and, you know, I personally, I think it's nonsense with Rachel Maddow because she covers such a wide berth that I don't think this would be an issue. I mean, did anybody, did she lose any sponsors when she covered Amanda Simpson? You know, I mean, they obviously could do far more than they do. I mean, I would never expect, and I don't think any of us would ever expect, somebody like Rachel Maddow or Lawrence O'Donnell or Ed Schultz or any of these guys to go and make a focus like, you know, like this show, because it would not be advantageous for them. But to mention it, sure. Because, you know, what they forget or they don't want to deal with or they just ignore is that, yeah, maybe the person watching is not unemployed or the person they're speaking to. But you know what? Almost everybody these days knows somebody who's lost their job or somebody who can't get hired or somebody who is out of work or somebody who is gay or somebody who is lesbian or trans or whatever. You know, just because they're not that person, that individual, does not mean that they don't care about those issues. I mean, you know, you may not have you may not be transgender yourself, but you might know somebody who is, or have a son or a daughter or a cousin or a friend or whatever. And, you know, for the 5 or 10 minutes it would take to cover, let's say, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act when it was introduced, as in yesterday, we should probably mention.
Yep.
You know, I think that's part of it. I think what they do is they find some. There's plenty of other things because, of course, somebody like Rachel Maddow, somebody like these guys on MSNBC, there's always something else to talk about. So I think the attitude is, well, you know, let's talk about something else because, you know, why not? Why should we bother with these people? You know, let's not forget, we're talking about these people who are, you know, Mr. Common Man Ed Schultz, you know, makes more in an afternoon than most of us make in a year. Let's not forget that, okay? These folks are multimillionaires, and so it shouldn't be surprising that they act like it. In the end, commercial media, regardless of whether it's coming from the left or coming from the right, political media, and really all commercial media, it's about money, 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 money. And if you're not going to make your company money, as in Glenn Beck, well, then you're going to be gone. Now, what I expect Beck to do is he's probably going to go and, like, do some sort of a pay web kind of situation. That's my guess. Because he has the notoriety and he has the audience already that he could make a pile of money. Don't forget, this guy makes, like, $32 million a year, most of which does not come from his television show. It comes from other things. He's got books out. He's, you know, it's not like this guy makes all his money from his Fox News show. And you know what? What'll be really interesting to see, I think, will be when Keith Olbermann starts his show this spring on Current TV. Now, unfortunately for myself, I don't have Current TV. We don't get it. The cable service that I have here doesn't offer it. And I could get it if I want Dish Network, but I ain't putting a fucking dish up on my house.
Oh, there's that horrible Charlie Ergen that runs that thing. That has got to be the worst fundamentalist bunch of bastards.
It's not only that. It's not only political. But you know, we had it for a while. We had Dish years ago. And the problem with Dish is that every time there's a storm or there's too heavy cloud cover or anything like that, you lose your signal. It was such a pain in the ass. And eventually we said, fuck this. And we went and got what we have out here. Not Comcast, it's Cablevision. But so it's Optimum Online.
You would support a company that openly discriminates against LGBT workers in their workforce?
No, absolutely
Dish Network
not.
Does.
Yeah, but the truth is at the time, we didn't know. I didn't know that they discriminated. They were just yet another service to get. And so actually they had some good programming that I enjoyed a lot that I can't get on any other network. Interestingly, they had Free Speech TV, which is very leftist.
Yep.
They carry Democracy Now, Dyke TV, you know, real left-wing and LGBT stuff, which I have not seen made available anywhere else.
Oh, the party's at Andy Hum's house. Oh, sure, Gay USA, now on DirecTV. Free Speech TV is now on DirecTV, too.
Oh, is it? Okay. Uh-huh. Well, we never had DirecTV here. Never even tried it.
It's groovy.
But the thing is, getting back to the point here, is we got to remember that this is why we need shows like this one, like Trans FM, Ethan St. Pierre, and the blogs, the Bellerico Project. You know, it was interesting. Bill Browning posted something on Bellerico, the end of the LGBT blogosphere as we know it. And it was a very good article. I encourage you to take a look at this. It's on the Bellerico Project, still on the front page. And basically what he was saying was he was talking about the idea of asking for contributions because they make some money on the advertising. Not a lot. But they make enough it covers Bill, it covers Jeremy, and it covers Alex, who, of course, is the managing editor. And that's not a lot, because all the money goes to those guys, as well it should, since, number one, they work the hardest on it, and they, that's what they live on. Now, they also do other things for money. I know Alex has another job. Alex lives in Paris and has a job. I think he's a teacher. And so they have others' income because you really can't live, even if you get good advertising, even if you have regular advertising on your blog, you don't make enough to really live on. And, Bill mentions in the article that he's considered shutting down at points. I know that. He said it to me personally from once or twice. And it's a real consideration. I know Pam from Pam's House Blend has also considered that. Mike Rogers has stopped writing for Blog Active. And it's a consideration because I'll tell you, there's a lot of work involved in blogging. I mean, every time that you publish an article of any reasonable size, that's a few hours of work. And, you got to dig up links, and you've got to write, and then you've got to edit, and then you've got to rewrite. And, it's a process, and it takes time, and it's work. I mean, these things don't pop out of nowhere. This is work. And it's work that, for the most part, you don't get paid for. Or if you do get paid, you get paid very, very little. Now, in my opinion, for speaking as somebody who has been a contributing editor for Bellerico, as somebody who's been a contributor there for almost 4 years now, my payment, in my opinion, is I get the notoriety. I get to be able to put my work out to a larger audience. Bellerico is one of the largest and most popular LGBT blogs on the net. And so when I publish there, which admittedly I haven't published in a while, and that's totally my fault, but when I publish there, my work gets to a much larger audience than it would if I was just on, let's say, LiveJournal or at transadvocate.com, where I also publish my work sometimes, or at Trans Group Blog. I mean, you know, it exposes my work to a much larger audience, and that's what I get at. You know, I am able to interact. I'm able to interact with a much larger segment of the community. But even with that, you know, I mean, that doesn't pay the rent. You know what I mean? That doesn't put food on the table. What you get is you get notoriety, and hopefully that notoriety opens some other doors. That's what you hope. You know, sometimes it works out that way. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, I'd like to think that, you know, when I started at Bellerico, I was read by a certain segment, not a lot, but I think my audience has increased substantially since the time I've been writing for Bellerico, and I'm very proud of that. I'm also proud to have participated in its growth and its expansion, and we have a real significant transgender audience and community there, which I'd like to think I've contributed to helping to create, as well as many other people who are both contributors and guest contributors, people who are regular commenters there. You know, I like to think I've made a contribution in that regard. You know, as have other people, both who are still there and some who have since moved on. And that's important, too. And it's worthwhile. And it's something that I do because I love it. And I do because I want to do it. And I do it because it's my way. This is my activism. You know, I am not really somebody with the capability or wherewithal to go out and lobby Congress when, you know, when they have these events. I've done that once or twice, but unfortunately, you know, I don't have the money. I mean, you go a trip to Washington, D.C. for a few days is that's a few hundred dollars. And that's more than I have. I mean, you know, on average, that's probably more than a week's pay for me. And, you know, so to be able to do that is not something I'm really that able to do. Now, I have done it. Literally, I have gone down to Washington, D.C. and lobbied with $10 in my pocket. I have done that, as Ethan St. Pierre will tell you, because I went down with him. I literally got by for like 2 days on $10 in my pocket. And that was it. You know, sometimes you can do that, but not always. Okay, well, actually, Mr. Mike, if you will check Skype text
it.
There, you will see that I have just given you Mara's number.
Thank you. I'll stick it right in the machine, babe.
Good. So in a minute or two, we will take a break, and Mike will get Mara on the phone, and then we'll get started with her. I'll tell you, and I'll just take a minute before we get Mara on the phone. You know, I've said a few things on Facebook and elsewhere about this bill that have concerned me. And I've come to understand that not all of my concerns were justified. One thing I called it Jim Crow, which probably isn't fair. And I should probably apologize for that, because it was probably, you know, a bit of hyperbole on my part. Well, what do you want? This is what I do. You know, I will freely admit I indulge in hyperbole on this show all the time. But, you know, occasionally you go a little over the top, and I will probably agree that I did in that case. So, you know, Mara and I have had a few interactions on that, and you know, I don't agree with Mara on everything, but I agree with her on a lot, and there's still a lot of concerns about HB 235 and its implications and other things, but there's also you know, it's not quite as evil, if you will, as some people tend to be making it out to be, at least not in my opinion. Okay, so I will not say that I've changed my opinion on this bill, but I will say I've revised it somewhat. I've moderated it a bit, because there are some good things in there, such as credit protections and some other things that will improve trans lives. I still, as we'll get into with Mara, there are still a few things that concern me. But, you know, there's also, I think, you know, when you get only half the story. And the truth is, in a lot of cases, that's what we get. We only get half the story. You operate on that, and you're not always right. And like I said, I think perhaps the Jim Crow thing was a bit over the top, and I confess to that. But there's some other things that are still concern me, and we're going to get into those with Mara in just a couple of minutes. So, hey, Mr. Mike, why don't you throw on a song, get Mara on the phone, and I'm going to visit the little girl's room, and we can get started with this.
Red Durkin from Transfusions. It's called Queer Snack, and it's on the Rebecca Giro Show. Mara Kiesling is coming up next. Stick with us.
In a couple.
Becky Giro from Trans FM, and Mara Kiesling is on the line. Becky, here we go.
Oh, hey, Mara, how you doing? Thanks for coming on.
I'm so excited to be on, Becky. How are you?
Good. Of course, I wanted to talk to you about HB 235. You and Lisa Moté released a post today basically clarifying a lot of the stuff, a lot of the acrimony around this bill that's been floating around, including some by yours truly. And one thing that I wanted to ask you about that jumps out at me was that you said that HB 235 protects the right of transgender employees to use bathrooms in the workplace in a non-discriminatory manner as part of the terms and conditions of employment. Now, one of the things I was wondering about was, in a lot of cases, I've had jobs like this, I'm sure other people have, the bathrooms that would be used by employees are in a place that isn't actually owned or controlled by the employer, in places like a mall or another situation where bathrooms are actually outside of the actual workplace that's controlled by the employer. Now, what I'm wondering is, could a transgender employee under a bill like HB 235 be legally subject to being denied gender congruent bathroom usage in that kind of situation?
No.
Okay. Well, that was okay. Because I mean, that's a real concern.
Well, let me explain it. So let's look at the logic of it. Okay. And in addition to a lot of misinformation, there's just been a lot of bad logic. So some folks have said there's a lot packed into the argument that people are making there. And first, let me keep saying this over and over again tonight, because nobody seems to get the main point here. The main point is, everybody thinks it sucks that public accommodations came out. I don't know of anybody who is thinking, yay, public accommodations came out. I think it sucks. I wasn't part of the team that was working on it, but I like to think that they probably could have kept it in, but I don't know. I wasn't there. So nothing about what is or isn't covered, or what isn't covered, the main argument still has to be, or the main discussion still has to be, do we really want to get nothing for 5 or 10 years, or do we want to get people's employment protected? Now, you could make an argument, which I don't have to make, that even if bathrooms weren't covered, it still might be worth doing. But all the lawyers working on this believe that bathrooms are covered. So let's look at the logic of that scenario you just brought up. So I read somewhere, it was actually on your Facebook page, but it was somebody else's post, where they said an employer who also was a public accommodation, so a retail establishment, a restaurant, could say, well, yeah, Becky, I have to give you a job, but, oh, sorry, I don't have to let you in the door. Okay. Well, that's just, you know, has anybody ever heard of that kind of a scenario making any common sense to anybody, but first of all? But second of all, it couldn't happen. That would be such an obvious pretext for employment discrimination that I really, really believe no judge, I mean, you can never say no judge in the world, because some judge is always going to screw something up. But,
right, but
it doesn't make any sense.
Okay, and I understand what you're saying there, Mara. But the other factor here is you know, when we're talking about the real world application of this kind of a law, we also in like a mall situation or many other kinds of these kinds of situations, there's a police presence involved, and police are, you know, they don't have the greatest track record with our community, and there's a concern, and I think it's maybe a valid concern that with a 235 law like this kind of thing, that the police would be able to discriminate, and you know, they throw people out of transgender people out of bathrooms in New York City, where there's been a law for years, and that maybe this kind of thing.
But that's the same. You're still missing the main point. Even if that was true. And sure, yes, some cop is always going to be, you know, there's always going to be some cop who's not following the law. But if that's true, it is also true that there are cops that will do that even if there was a public accommodations law passed. And remember, there's no right to sue in the public accommodations section. Now, on our post in Bellerico today, somebody whose stuff I always like to read, Zoe Brain, I assume that's not her real name, but I don't know.
I don't know.
She points out that there's another bill running through the legislature in Maryland now, HB 285, which would grant the right to sue for public accommodations discrimination.
But that's only solely for gay and lesbian people, isn't it?
No. No, it's for the entire protected classes that are protected.
Well, that's
public
news to me.
So it would be race. I'm not an attorney, as you know, so I'm not going to get too exact here. But I did check on that after Zoe wrote that and specifically was told a couple things. One, and I'm going to write this once I have time tonight in response to her very thoughtful post. First of all, we all want 285 to pass eventually, right? It doesn't particularly help trans people now because trans people don't have public accommodation protections. But when we do, we're going to want them to be truthful. Public accommodation protections. So eventually you want 285 passed. And why 285 was proposed, by the way, it really isn't even seen as an LGBT bill. It was not Equality Maryland or gay people who were pushing it. It was actually blind people. Because there are a lot of blind Marylanders who can't get any relief for the discrimination they face in public accommodations. But again, even if that were true, even if this cop is lurking about looking to disrespect trans people, and we all know that those cops exist, that doesn't mean we turn down employment protections for because we can't get public accommodation protections at the same time.
Okay,
I never got to your scenario about, so let's say the McDonald's at the mall. So you work for the McDonald's at the mall. They have to let you use the workplace bathroom, but you're saying, what if the mall says, whoa, you're not our employee, so we don't have to let you use our public accommodation?
Right, exactly, because, you know, you're talking about two different companies. You're talking about mall management, and you're talking about McDonald's or whoever owns the McDonald's.
Okay. I have never in my life seen a rental agreement between McDonald's and the mall, but I guarantee you, there is something that says that the employees of McDonald's get to use the bathrooms in the mall.
Okay. But you know, here's the other part of this is also, you know, if there was an opportunity. Now, I don't know if under this law, trans people would have a right to sue if this law was broken. But wouldn't the courts have a tendency? And I think we've seen this in other areas where they would say, well, you know, if the legislature intended to let you have these protections, they would have passed a law with public accommodations, but they didn't. So therefore, the intent of the legislature is that, you you know, you shouldn't have these protections, so too bad, cops can throw you out, and
Becky, here again, going back to argument number one, that's how it is now.
Yeah.
Passing HB 235 now without public accommodations doesn't change that. It doesn't make it worse. It doesn't make it better, or it doesn't make it legally better, but it doesn't make it worse. It doesn't kind of make it worse. It doesn't legally make it worse.
Okay.
Right now, that's the case in Maryland, and if HB 235 passes, which, you know, I'm actually fairly pessimistic about this evening, that would still be the case.
Right. Okay. But another question I wanted to ask you about this is the possible impact that the passage of HB 235 would have on future efforts in other states, other jurisdictions, perhaps even ENDA. Do you believe that if HB 235 passes, that it'll make it more likely that we'll see other states and jurisdictions begin to introduce future trans-inclusive anti-discrimination bills without public accommodation protections?
No.
No.
But let me clarify that. First of all, that's where the pressure is right now anyway. We are getting our butts handed to us on the bathroom issue. And we haven't passed a statewide law in 4 years, or almost 4 years. Now, that's going to be remedied in a couple weeks. Hawaii's going to pass their employment protections, which, by the way, they weren't able to pass before. And nobody was complaining that they got housing and public accommodations and all this, but they didn't get employment. And the people who set this, you know, who set up this argument, if they were being intellectually honest, and they would say that public accommodations and housing protections without employment are useless because if you don't have a job, you can't even go to the mall to enjoy your public accommodations. But they aren't saying that because, you know what, they didn't think of it at the time. Because they probably had something else to complain about at that moment. But, you know, we're going to pass this thing in Hawaii. I shouldn't say we. I'm not involved in that one either. But we collectively will have employment protections in Hawaii almost certainly. I don't know the schedule, but it's gone through all. They just have to basically wrap it up now, and Governor Abercrombie will absolutely sign it, I'm sure. So we're going to have that, but that's the first time in 4 years. And the reason is the bathrooms. We've been beat up on the bathrooms. And I think, you know, I would like to say what we should do is deal with the bathrooms head on. And that's what we're going to start doing. I'd rather not avoid the fight anymore because it shut us down for 4 years. You know, maybe we have to go through the fire to get through the other side.
That brings me to another question, Mara. You know, there's the concern that by supporting and passing a bill like HB 235 without the public accommodations, are we sending a message to legislators in other jurisdictions across the United States that there actually is a valid reason to be concerned about the possibility of, you know, this nonsense about sexual assaults in bathrooms as a result of this law? I mean, we know that this is nonsense and that there's no evidence to back it up. But what I wonder is, are we ceding the moral high ground here by accepting and supporting a bill like this?
There are compromises in every one of the statewide bills that have been passed so far, with the possible exception of one, and that's even debatable. And I would venture to say you would be hard-pressed to find anybody who knew what those compromises were. I mean, the Hawaii one I just told you about is pretty obvious. They left out employment.
Right.
There's always a compromise. Some of them have bathroom language, some of them don't. And some of the bathroom language is good, some of it's bad. And there's always that. And, yeah, I mean, it is correct that sometimes, not every time, but usually, legislators will say, well, what's going on in other states? And then the advocates have to walk them through that. We see it in driver's licenses now. In fact, that's how we're having such a successful time getting our model driver's license implemented. It's now implemented in 8 or 9 states. It was, you know, passed in D.C., where you know, the advocates here started from scratch and didn't really have much to point to. It was kind of like California, but they said, you know, here's where it should be. Then it became possible to go to Massachusetts and say, hey, look at this really good driver's license policy that D.C. is doing. And then we went to New Jersey and said, look what Massachusetts and D.C. did. And then, you know, and when we got to Pennsylvania, we were able to say, look at what these seven or eight states, this is the new state of the art, the trend. So, yeah, but the argument you're making, I mean, it's possible that some legislator will see that and ask about it. But the flaw in the logic is the people who are making that argument are saying the activists, including the lead sponsor, were incompetent for letting that happen. And we resent that, and we hate her, and we will give her death threats. But by the way, every other activist in the country is just as incompetent.
Yeah, which is, you know, ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous. And by the way, I was not calling the lead sponsor incompetent. I don't think I've ever even met her. So I mean, I heard her make a really wonderful speech when the bill got in the House of Delegates. But, you know.
Well, I heard she used some language that, like, she got angry and said, you know, you people are blah, 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 or something of that nature. And people took offense to that because it seemed like she was attacking the community. You know, oh, you people just never are happy. And, you know, the truth is based on what we've heard historically, you know, it seems to be a common attitude of politicians. It's like, what more do these people want, kind of thing.
Yeah, no. She is a wonderful person. She's a tremendous supporter. I'm not going to judge whether or not she made the right decision. I like to think she didn't, but I wasn't, you know, I don't know what her calculus was. But, one way to look at it is, it passed to the House when we could never even get it out of committee before, so maybe she was right. Interestingly, something that people have said since it passed the House is, if it passed so well, how come it couldn't have passed without public accommodations? And that's like saying, you know, the basketball team won with its best player. How come it couldn't win without its best player? I mean, I guess this is sort of the inverse of that. But,
right.
You know, just because it passed, we don't know. We can't know, and I'm really not trying to defend her here, but if just because it passed without it certainly doesn't mean it could have passed with it, and it also doesn't necessarily mean it couldn't have passed with it.
Right.
So I just don't think that it passed the House gives us a clear indication of whether it could have passed the House differently.
Okay. Another thing that concerns me a little bit is, so we've heard from some people that they say, well, you know, after we get HB 235 passed into law, we're going to keep working to get those public accommodations in the future. On the other hand, we also know from our own experiences across the country that the track record on coming back and adding more protections after the fact, it's happened once or twice, but generally the track record on that stuff is pretty darn poor. And so are you concerned that once we get this passed, if we get it passed, that the legislators will say, okay, we're done, you know, and, you know, deal with it? And, I mean, is that a concern for you?
The bigger problem here is going to be the bad feelings that this has caused between members of the legislature. Right now, we should be most angry at what the chair of the Judicial Proceedings Committee and the Majority Leader are doing. They are totally, totally disrespecting us. They are against the bill, and they're bottling it up. And it has nothing to do, nothing to do with the trans people who oppose it. Senator Frosch has been against this bill forever. Senator Miller is generally against these kind of things. But, you know, Senator Frost saw an opportunity to bottle it up very dishonorably. Senator Miller, the majority leader, is apparently peeved over how the progress of the marriage bill went. And they're sort of disrespecting us for that. Our lead sponsor on the bill went after the Senate leader. And that's going to be, you know, hard feelings that are going to be hard to fix. And And, you know, the activists, you know, there have been, I don't know numbers, but, you know, a dozen or so trans people have been working on this for a long time. And then a handful of people came in and tried to burn it down. And while they weren't successful, it's got to be leaving their, I do not know, I mean, I hope they can all figure out how to work together now, but there can't be a lot of trust between people right now. And we have to, you know, they're going to have to figure out how to do that. That's a much bigger problem. But, you know, it isn't going to be when bills fail, no, they can't sit forever. You know, this is a thing we had with ENDA in, you know, 2007. Everybody said, oh, if you do this, then they're not going to ever want to do it again. And, you know, they can't not ever do it again. And at some point, Senator Miller is just going to understand that people are just going to keep coming back and coming back and coming back. But when it happens, it's going to be entirely up to the trans folks in the state. But, you know, most of the really good activists with experience on this are just feeling totally burned by other trans people who have just been making stuff up and lying and hating. And, you know, our best sponsor has had death threats against her.
Right. I was talking about this last week on the show, where I said, you know, there's a line between enthusiastic activism and, you know, just acting like jerks and making yourself so unpleasant to deal with that forget about the merits of the bill. People just say, I don't want to deal with this. You know, I think unfortunately what's happening is we're crossing that line a little bit too often. Don't you think?
Well, there is, you know, there just is one stream of trans activism, which is just, and you know, people are going to hate that I say this, and it is not trans activism. This is not what's getting all of our bills passed. We're moving faster than any other civil rights movement in history ever has. And it isn't because of the stream of trans activism, which is, let's just sit here at our computers and watch for somebody to make a slight mistake and then destroy their character. Yeah. And that stream of trans activism is unproductive, it's morally reprehensible, and it's kind of embarrassing. But we do have that. The internet has been a real huge boon to us forming communities and doing activism and organizing, but it's also allowed, you know, angry people to just be angry.
Yes.
You know, we see what the Tea Party is doing, not just now to the Republican Party, but to the whole country. And we have to be careful that we don't develop our own unreasonable, hateful Tea Party.
Right. I know what you're saying. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about, because I know we're starting to running low on time here, but we know that ENDA was reintroduced this week in the House, and it had substantially fewer co-sponsors than it had in the last session, when the Democrats, of course, had control of both houses. Now, what I would like to know is, do you think that this was a good idea for Congressman Frank to introduce this now, or should they have waited until there was a real chance of passage again, hopefully when the Democrats retake the House?
No, absolutely it was a good idea. I mean, first of all, let me run through the numbers, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I got called by two reporters last night who were like, oh my God, there's fewer co-sponsors. And I was totally caught off guard by this question because there aren't a lot of fewer co-sponsors. When Congressman Frank introduced the bill in June of 2009, there were 117 co-sponsors. Mm-hmm. This week there were 111, or what are called original co-sponsors. So they're listed on the bill when the bill drops. So there's only six fewer, and but there were 203 co-sponsors at the end of the last Congress, and only about 100, I forget the exact number, but only about 165 are still in Congress. So right. We lost basically 40 or 45, I forget, co-sponsors from Congress. And we only dropped six in original co-sponsors. This has been a really horrifically busy, kooky week on the Hill. And if you look, Jill Weiss did a nice post on Balerico where she talks about this, and she lists be former co-sponsors that aren't co-sponsors yet. And if you look down the list, these are people who are going to be co-sponsors. Like I remember seeing Keith Ellison, who's just an amazing supporter from Minneapolis. He's going to be a co-sponsor. He just didn't get around to it this week. And that's not the least big deal at all. Nobody in Washington is worried about it or freaked out about it. You know, Congressman Frank has a tendency, in my experience, to not particularly care how many co-sponsors there are even at the end of the Congress. He's, you know, he's always told us, you know, I want you to get me votes, not co-sponsors. And, I mean, he's fine to get the co-sponsors. He's always been. But, you know, his focus has always been do the education and get the votes. So
yeah, but you know, Mara, if you remember, I'm sure you remember this. Back in 2008, Barney Frank said, "You know, get us 15 more members, and we'll get this bill passed." And as I recall, we got them. I believe it was 22, and somehow still didn't happen. You know, so you know, I tend to like, you know, I hear Barney Frank saying things like this, and I'm like, really? Are you sure? Because, you know, the last time you told us this, well, you know, I mean, for example, and this is, I wanted to ask you about this. Recently we heard his senior aide, Diego Sanchez, who of course is a trans man, say that we had the votes, but we ran out of time to get ENDA passed in the last session. And we've heard all kinds of different opinions on whether Diego was correct, including from Congressman Frank, who said that he wasn't sure Diego's assessment was correct. What's your take on this? Was he right?
Oh, I believe Diego was right. And Barney, I've heard him speak about this, or I should say Congressman Frank. He's not that far off. What the question, there certainly were enough votes to pass the bill. We all agree on that. And I'm as positive as I can be without wanting to speak for somebody to say that Congressman Frank would agree with that. That wasn't in question last Congress. What was in question was whether or not we had sufficient votes to survive this motion to recommit legislative maneuver that keeps cropping up. Right. And that's what we spent the last 6 months on, was trying to make sure that we were, you know, we were going to get that. And it's really hard because we didn't know what the motion to recommit was. If you remember in the end of 2009, right before ENDA got, you know, put in the closet, there was a bill that came up, and the Republicans offered a motion to recommit that was something like any federal employee who is caught watching pornography at work on his or her workplace computer more than three times has to be fired. And so all the
Democrats... But two is okay, right? I mean...
Right, they had to vote for it, or else there'd be... You know, TV ads saying Congresswoman Giroux supports people watching pornography at work.
So it's ridiculous. We were
all trying to educate and get vote commitments on a hypothetical motion to recommit, and that's really hard. I think Diego. Well, no, I won't speak to Diego because actually when he said that, I don't remember he was talking about the main vote. But I think we all agree if we could have gotten past the motion to recommit, we were home free in the House. The Senate is a more, you know, murky kind of a thing. Right. But I think ultimately we would have survived the motion to recommit. And I think the folks in Congress were not quite as confident as I was.
Yeah. Let me ask you another quick question, because I know we're pretty much out of time here. But do you think there have been a lot of people who have floated around the idea that they say, well, you know, we still have control, we meaning the Democrats, still have control of the Senate. And wouldn't it be a great idea, just like Barney Frank tried to do in 2007 with a non-inclusive ENDA, wouldn't it be great if we tried to get an inclusive ENDA through the Senate now? You know, even if there's no hope of it passing in the House. What do you think of that idea?
Well, absolutely. We're already having conversations trying, first of all, to get a hearing in the Senate. But yeah, if it seems possible to pass it in the Senate, and remember, this Congress is still really, really young. So I don't think we know for sure that, you know, we have 60 votes. But I think if we thought there were 60 votes to pass it in the Senate, I'd love to see it pass. And yet another reason for it to be introduced. And I think you're going to see the Senate version of the bill introduced very, very soon.
Oh, really? Okay, so you do think that this is a realistic possibility then?
It's too early for me to say it's a realistic possibility. What
gotcha.
I will tell you is, I think it's a realistic, it is a very realistic ask of Senator Harkin from the Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee to ask for a hearing. And it is a reasonable ask and to see how far we can move it. My bet would be, and again, it's so early in the Congress and we really haven't worked through all of this stuff. And you know, I mean, the way the internet works, that will sound like a story to somebody. You know, somebody will think that I just said that we haven't done anything in 4 months or something. But it's not that at all. We've had some meetings, but nobody really knows the lay of the land yet. But right now, nothing is getting through the Senate. Apparently, they've put through two bills, which I didn't actually even realize until the other day, but everything is gummed up in the Senate right now. And remember, last time, the House passed almost 400-and-something bills that never made it through the Senate. And, you know, getting almost anything done in the Senate now is almost impossible. But we want to have a hearing, and if we can get committee action, that would be a great step. If we can, you know, get a vote in the Senate, that would be great. And you know, as always, it might be, you know, if we did get that, and again, I don't know if it's realistic yet or not, but if we did get that, it might be as a standalone bill or it might be an amendment to something.
Gotcha.
And,
okay.
And okay. That's just how that goes.
Okay. Well, I want to say thank you for joining us again, Mara. It's always a great conversation when you're on, and I really appreciate you clearing some of this stuff up for us.
Absolutely. I'm happy to come on anytime.
Awesome. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye, Mara.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Okay. Well, that was, of course, Mara Kiesling, Executive Director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. Certainly cleared up a lot of stuff for me. You know, again, as I said at the beginning before we had her on, you know, I've said a few things that based on what I knew at the time and some which were real concerns, some of which I asked her just now, others which maybe, you know, were a little over the top and maybe not as factually based as I had originally believed. So, you know, I tend to, I'm far from perfect too, you know, and so I can do a mea culpa now and then if I go over the top, and so be it. In any case, hey, Mr. Mike, why don't we throw on a song and then we'll come back with some news and some chat, and you can give us a call. As always, you can give us a call, and our number here is 928-277-4921. And so we'll have, we'll take, what did you think about what Mara had to say today? Give us a call, let us know what you're thinking, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. What do we got on tap there, Mr. Mike?
Well, it's a song called Poison. It's off the Transfusion CD compilation, and here's Kestrel Kale from Trans FM.
Like many men, I found my masculinity in a bottle. Peeled back the foil, plunged in, and let my liver take the beating. It was an easy excuse. Let me refuse responsibility for being sexual, strong, or angry. An ex-lover called it poison. But the noise on her lips meant nothing. When she'd say, "It won't make you a man," I'd reply, "I don't want to be one, but it's fun to signify, like John Wayne in a saloon, or Sinatra crooning to a nightclub full of beautiful ladies like you." I'd smile and she'd sigh and rub her temples. She and I, we didn't last long because I preferred to keep my poison, and I don't know why I still call it that. It's not like it'll kill me, and anyways, I could quit anytime I wanted. Easy. No, I know some guys who have done it. I mean, they haven't been the same since, but isn't that kind of expected? It's a shame that here I'm talking like it's an addiction, because it is, but it isn't in most descriptions. Not like a drug, a hard one, that is. It just helps me to get through the day in a way that feels comfortable, safe, and solid, and real. And who would deny me that, aside from my ex-lover and her friends and some others? But really, who's counting? Not to make more excuses, but we all have our vices and our poisons and only make noise about others' abuses. At least mine is controlled and conscious and aware of the dangers of trading a bleeding heart for a bleeding liver, and don't even start to pathologize me, because in my eyes, I could be doing much worse, because when I turn for my fix and the bottle is empty, I skip the liquor store and head down to the pharmacy for needles and my bottle labeled poison, starting with a letter T.
Becky Giro on Trans FM with some actual disco music. I can't imagine what it'll be. Freaking out here over what's going on in Washington, D.C. Is it going to be a government shutdown, Becky Giro? What in the world is going to happen to us now? Will there be mail delivery? Will there be a congresswoman or congressman to complain to? Will the president receive his paycheck? What will happen to us all if the government shuts down, Becky Giro?
Well, wait a minute. Hang on. First of all, mail service is not... does not end.
Oh, thank God.
There's a government shutdown. No, because the Postal Service is a self-funded government service.
I'm saved. I've got stuff coming from Amazon.
Yes. Well, that is actually, the Postal Service is not something that will shut down.
Oh.
In fact, I didn't know this until recently. Did you know, Mr. Mike, that the Postal Service is actually provided for in the Constitution?
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would be trying to privatize it and hand all the business over to UPS FedEx. They've tried to do that before.
But there are certain things that certain people wouldn't get paychecks, and certain government workers wouldn't be allowed to work. They wouldn't be they would actually have to like turn in their PDAs and it's a whole thing. According to what I saw, and I'm just reporting this off of what I saw on cable news recently. The last time we had a shutdown, which was during the Clinton administration, it cost us like over $1 billion in terms of, all the various costs. Public parks will shut down, stuff. It's like, don't go on a tour of D.C. while the government shut down, because you won't get to see anything. You won't be able to go to any of the public places or anything like that. So there are a lot of things that would cause problems. And it's interesting, because I believe, I really believe, and I've said this before, I don't know if I've said it on the air, but I've said it before many times, that I believe that what the Republicans are doing here are shooting themselves in the foot. That's what they're doing. Okay, because if the Democrats are smart, if they have half a brain, what they're going to do is when the time it comes around and when, congressmen and women are running for office and senators are running for office, what they should do is they should run clips of these Tea Party events, with Michelle Bachmann and Mike Pence, where the crowd's screaming, shut it down, shut it down. Last time... generally speaking, the Republicans wound up getting most of the blame for the shutdown. This time, I think it's going to be because, look at the media coverage here. I mean, all you have to do is play some Mike Pence clips and some of these other people. Boehner, first of all, this guy is not a leader. I mean, say what you want about Nancy Pelosi, okay? Granted, I think she screwed us on a lot of things last time around. I think she could have gotten into past if she really wanted to. I think she made a conscious choice that she wanted to chicken out as usual. But putting that on the shelf for a moment, okay, she was a hell of a lot better leader, majority leader, forget about speaker, just leader of the House majority, which is, of course, really her main job. She was a much better leader than John Boehner is, because I don't think John Boehner can control his own party, his own House constituency. I think what's happening here is Boehner is going and saying, okay, originally they suggested $33 billion in cuts. The president and the Democrats said, okay, we'll do the $33 billion. They said, no, now we want this much. And we want to defund NPR, and we want to defund Planned Parenthood, and we want to, and we want to gut the EPA and all this stuff. And it's like, what it is, this is a game of chicken. Oh, well, you're willing to go for that? Well, let's see if you'll go for this, too. And I think what's happening is the Tea Party people are just saying, no, we're not doing this. This is what we were elected to do. And, you know, on the one hand, you know, you give the Tea Party people credit. You know, you wish that the Democrats were as committed to their values as the Tea Party people are to theirs. You know, you really do. You wish that the Democrats were as willing to stand up for principle as the other side is. And, you know, that's part of the problem, is I believe, and I think this has been part of the problem for a long time, is that the Democrats are not as willing to stand on principle. And I mean stand on principle, not just talk about it, but actually say, no, this far and no further. Then the Republicans. The Republicans are saying, this is what we'll accept, end of story. And if not, well, too bad. Then we're willing to take the shutdown. I don't think Boehner wants a shutdown, because I think he understands that the Republicans are going to get blamed. Okay, I think that they're starting to understand that, you know, if you're going to shut down Planned Parenthood, which prevents, on average, like 600,000 abortions a year, people aren't that stupid. They're going to figure this out. I mean, I think the whole nonsense with, you know, healthcare is going to kill grandma, I think that hurt them. I think, you know, people are starting to question, you know, people are not taking what Republicans say, or what politicians say, I should say, at face value anymore. The bloom is off the rose with Obama. I mean, everybody was loving, oh my God, we've elected this wonderful guy, and he's black, and he's progressive, and he's this, and isn't it wonderful? I think the bloom is off the rose with that stuff, because, you know, we thought that we had elected a progressive, but what we really elected was a moderate. And that's the problem, is he ran as a progressive, but he's governing as a centrist. And that's not what people voted for. People didn't vote for a guy who's going to play both sides against the middle. They voted for a guy who said, yes, we can. Not, well, maybe we'll get to it if it's convenient for us. You know, and I think that's what's happening, is that's where the left is going, is saying, no. You said this. Now do it. And maybe Obama made his own key mistake when he said, hold me accountable. Because that's exactly what the left is doing. They're saying, we're going to hold you accountable. Because you said you were going to pass this. You said you were going to speak out on behalf of this and use the bully pulpit for that. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I think that's what people are, you know, starting to call him out on. And then, you know, we had... here's another thing that happened. This was, I guess, it was just announced a day ago. And I think it was probably the single smartest move the Democrats could have made that they've made recently, which doesn't involve fucking over their own base, which is Tim Kaine, who, of course, is the former head of the DNC, who has announced he's running to replace Jim Webb as Virginia senator. Who Webb has already said he's not going to run for another term. So Tim Kaine is left the job. He resigned in order to run for Senate, and he was replaced by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is a real progressive, and she's somebody who stands up for values. She's somebody who is staunchly on the left. She's pro-woman. She's pro-gay. She's pro-trans. She's everything that we would love to see our president be. And I think that, you know, even if Obama is not ready to go to where we need him to be, at the very least, he appointed somebody who is there, who said, no, this is, you know, we're not there yet, but this is where we're going. And I think that Debbie Wasserman Schultz in particular has about 1,000 times more credibility with this community. And by that, I mean the LGBT community as a whole, than Obama or certainly Tim Kaine. Okay, let's not forget, Tim Kaine is the guy who signed Virginia's marriage law into law, Virginia's gay marriage ban into law when he was governor of Virginia. So his credibility with our community was questionable at best, even at the best of times. And I think getting somebody who's a true progressive like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I think that was a very smart move on his part. And hopefully, it's a sign. But I think the biggest problem here is I think Democrats have to stop abusing their base. They have to stop looking at us as an irritation, as a distraction, and start looking at us as what we should be, which is the reason that they're there in the first place. And that if you want a second term, you owe us. You got to give us something to vote for. And I think the Democrats are starting to understand that, whether or not they're going to put it into office, you know, because I'll tell you the truth. What I believe is I think we're going to see a lot more once Barack Obama wins his second term. And I believe he will, because what have the Republicans got? They got nothing. What do they got? Donald Trump? Mitt Romney? Okay, Mitt Romney will never be president of the United States. Mark my words, you can record this and play it back in a year and a half from now, or you know, a year and three quarters from now, and mark my words, Mitt Romney will never be president of the United States. And why will he not be president of the United States? Because two reasons. Number one, because he got to Obamacare. He passed Romney Care, which is essentially the same bill or same plan on a state level. That's number one reason. Number two, and this shouldn't be, but it nonetheless is, he's a Mormon. And there is a certain segment of the Republican Party who will not vote for a Mormon. End of story. The evangelicals consider the Mormons a cult. And anybody who is a Mormon is considered a cultist. Okay, and don't forget, okay, and I mean, I hate to talk about stuff from 50 years ago because I'm not Chris Matthews, but, you know, don't forget that when John F. Kennedy was running for the presidency, everybody was concerned, oh, he's a Catholic, you know, he'll take his orders from the Pope, you know, but yet he won and was, even in the short amount of time we had him, was probably one of our country's greatest presidents of the 20th century. And, you know, who knows what he might have done if he had not been assassinated. You know, so I think that kind of put the lie to that. But I don't believe that Mitt Romney will ever be president because he's a Mormon. Don't forget, remember one of the digs that was always about Al Gore when he was running was not about Al Gore. It was about Joe Lieberman. Well, he's an Orthodox Jew. What, is he not going to come to work on a Saturday if there's a war, you know? I mean, it was nonsense. It was silliness. But, you know, people think, there are people who think like that. First of all, they don't understand the religion. And second of all, you know, it gives them something, because let's be honest, just like there are some people who will never vote for a Mormon, there are a lot of people who to this day will just not vote for a Jew. And that's just the reality, okay? And again, I mean, if he was running on the Democratic side, might be a different story. But I do not believe that a Mormon can get the nomination. So what have you got, okay? Who have you got here? You got Donald Trump? Forget it, okay? First of all, I don't believe he's running. I believe that this is all a sideshow just to drum up ratings for his TV show. Okay, that's what I believe. I don't believe he's ever actually going to run. I think this is just him making media waves. So who else do you have? Tim Pawlenty? Who the hell is he? Does anybody really know anything about this guy? I mean, he's duller than dishwater, and nobody knows his positions. Nobody gives a shit. I mean, even the Republicans, I think he's polling at like 4%. So who else do you have? Sarah Palin? Give me a break. Nobody's going to vote for Sarah Palin. Even the Republicans won't vote for Sarah Palin. I mean, because what she is, let's be honest, what she is a media figure. Okay? She is a Fox News person. That's what she is. She's an ideologue.
Isn't her purpose really to get all of these crazy ideas out there, and that tends to warp the culture a little bit? She's the extremist who plugs all of these crazy ideas into the culture. She's serving a function for the extreme right wing that way.
Right, which is great for Fox News, but nobody wants her as president. Even the Republicans don't want her as president. So what else do you have? Michelle Bachmann?
Oh, that's another one.
I mean, you know, I would love, you know, it's funny because a while back, this had to be several weeks ago, I was talking to somebody. I have somebody who's a right winger who I occasionally trade tweets with on Twitter.
Ooh,
and
icky.
He said that he wanted to see a Palin Bachmann ticket. I was like, oh, please let it be so, because then Michelle can start picking out D.C. high schools for the girls right now. You know, I mean, honestly, I mean, who's going to vote for that combo? You know, so what do they have? Newt Gingrich, forget it. He's not going to be president. You know, that's the thing, because you got to remember, okay, just because somebody is popular with Republicans does not mean that he's going to be popular enough to win a majority of votes nationwide. And I don't think Newt Gingrich has that kind of pull. Just like I don't think and none of them come close to, I mean, Obama's popularity is not what it once was. But he's doing nowhere near as badly as any of these guys. So unless there's somebody waiting in the wings that we don't know about yet, who's going to come from behind and suddenly become the figurehead, unless there's somebody there that we are not yet, I don't see anybody being able to take on Obama, okay? Because Obama's got the minority vote locked up, okay? I mean, with all the anti-immigration crap that the Republicans have been pulling, Arizona and all that stuff, okay? Hispanics are not going to vote for anyone else. They're not going to vote for Republicans. The blacks, forget it. There's like, he's got like 90% support among African Americans. Okay. He's taken a hit among, you know, overall, but nowhere near the kind of hit that he would need to take in order to make a Republican candidate viable. So my belief, at least at this point, given the situation at this time, and of course that may change, but my belief at this time, in this place, at this situation, is Obama is pretty much a shoo-in for a second term. Getting back to my original point here. And assuming that Obama is going to get in a second term, I think he's going to be a lot more liberal the second time around when he knows he doesn't have to run again. I think you're going to see him come out for gay marriage. I think you're going to see him come out much more strongly in favor of equal rights in terms of workplace rights, in terms of other rights, for LGBT people. I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see Obama really take the, you know, a more aggressive, progressive stance than you saw during his first term. Because once he's in the second time around, he's never going to run again. Okay? That's it. His political career, then the clock is ticking, starting in 4 years, and it's over. Then he becomes Bill Clinton, you know, goes to, you know, they'll send him off to a foreign country to go negotiate something.
It's,
you know,
like early retirement.
Right. But I mean, come on, the guy's under 50. You know, he's going to be in his early 50s. It's funny, you know, because Obama is actually less than a year older than I am. He was born in August of 61. I was born in May of 62. Okay. So Obama is going to be like, what is it? 53 years old when he leaves office. Okay. That's nothing. I mean, he's got a whole career ahead. I mean, he could do a whole other career at that point. And let's not forget, I mean, you know, this is no slouch. The man's a published author with two best-selling books. You know, he's a major lawyer. He's a civil rights professor. I mean, he could do a lot of different things. But I believe that once he wins that second term, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see him come out much more strongly. I believe if Obama wins, and he brings the Congress along with him. In other words, if the Democrats retake the House and hold on to the Senate, which is no sure thing by any stretch, but if it happens, I think you're going to see ENDA get passed. I think you're going to see DOMA repealed. I think you're going to see a lot of things. I think you're going to see all the stuff that we've been complaining about on this show and on the blogs and everywhere else. I think all that stuff is suddenly going to get the attention that it deserves, because then Obama can come out and really use that bully pulpit. Okay. Because I think what you're seeing right now is he's still running scared. Okay. They've been talking about an omnibus bill. Recently they were talking about having an executive order that would prevent federal contracts with companies that don't have full LGBT rights in place, corporate rights, signing an executive order. Now, I think it was Chris Johnson of the Washington Blade questioned him about that recently. Not Obama himself, but Jay Carney, his press secretary. And, just like Robert Gibbs, Jay Carney danced around. And he said, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. They're playing games because they know the election's coming up, and they don't want the Republicans to use that as a club, because the Republicans are already trying to drum up the social issues. I mean, look what they're doing with these riders on the budget. What are they focusing on? Abortion and Planned Parenthood and all this crap. Because I think they understand, and I believe this. I believe that the Republicans are correctly of the opinion that if we don't get this done now, we could forget it. Because once Obama is in office, he's going to bring the Democratic Party with him. And then we're not going to have another chance to do anything for the next 4 years. Probably not at all, because by the time he gets out of office, people will start to say, hey, I like this Democratic agenda. It's a lot better for me as a citizen. I think that's why you're seeing what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio and Florida and all these states. They're trying to get it done now. Because they're aware that if they wait until after the next election, public opinion is not going to be on their side. It already isn't on their side. It's worth noting that they just had an election for state Supreme Court in Wisconsin. And the guy who was the crony of Scott Walker, the governor who signed the union busting bill, lost narrowly to a woman who was against it. Okay, and this is a woman who, when they polled before... when they did a poll previous to the whole union busting situation, she was trailing by like 30 points. And she beat him. Narrowly, but she beat him. And so that should tell you something. It should say that the tide is turning. Because now what's happening is, I believe, that the Republicans, people are looking at the Republicans and saying, oh, now I get it. See, because they seem to forget that Republicans are members of unions. Republicans have are women who may have at some time in their lives needed an abortion. Republicans are people who like Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid and all those bills and all those laws that the Republicans want to destroy and that they're attacking. And I think what they're trying to do, the reason why you're seeing what you're seeing now, is that the Republicans are correctly determining, it's like, if we don't get this done now, it's going to be a long time before we get another chance, if ever. Because let's not forget that as the senior citizens, who are generally the most conservative group, die off, and they're replaced by younger voters who are among the most liberal, this country is getting more and more liberal. Kids are growing up and becoming voters. And they're saying, why should I care if some gay couple can get married? Why should it bother me if a trans person can get a job? I don't see the problem. Why shouldn't these people have the same rights I do? I don't get it. And they're also saying, yeah, I'm a Christian, or I'm a Muslim, or I'm a Jew, or I'm a whatever, but I don't see how that makes me a bigot. You see, I that's what I think is happening. And I think as time goes on, and as more seniors are replaced with more young voters, the tide turns. And I think what we have seen is we're seeing a tipping point here. I think we're witnessing it. I think we're in it. And I think we, as a community, as an LGBT community, and as a trans community, are going to benefit from that. I think we're seeing it. I mean, look at the schools. Look at the universities that are making allowances for their transgender. They're having co-ed dorms. And who does that benefit? I mean, men could room together. Gay guys could get a room together long before this. So that certainly wasn't a problem. Okay, so who does co-ed dorms benefit? Well, if you're a person in transition, it might benefit you. You know, that's where I think, you know, people are coming out of college and out of those situations with a different worldview than these seniors who came out of school and had their worldviews formulated in a much, much different world. You know, people who are like, you know, our parents' age, who went to school, let's say, in the 50s, and of course, that was a very different time. Before the Civil Rights Act, before, you know, when just being known as a Jew, forget about black or Hispanic or whatever, just being known to be a Jew could cost you your job. It's a very different world. Those folks are dying off, you know, and it's, you know, people say, oh, you know, it's so cold to talk about that kind of, but it's the truth. People get old and they die. And the young kids are growing up without these prejudices and without these bigotries. And they're becoming less and less credible. And so I think the Republicans are coming to understand that they're not going to be able to play on these social issues the way they have been in the past. That this stuff just isn't flying. It's flying less and less as time goes on. You know, let's not forget that when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, it got not a lot, but a significant amount of Republican support. I mean, Scott, what the hell's his name? The guy Brown. From the senator from Massachusetts. He voted for it, and there was a lot of, you know. It's no longer presumed, you know, people aren't voting their religion like they used to. It used to be unquestionable that, you know, oh, well, you know, we can't possibly give gay people rights because after all, they'll be raping small children in classrooms. People don't buy that shit anymore. Now they're trying it with us. Now it's about bathrooms, you know. It's not classrooms, it's bathrooms now. You know, as we were talking about with Mara Kiesling a little earlier, you know, I think as time goes on, if more people have interaction with trans folks, people are starting to understand that this is nonsense too. And I think our biggest problem is that there aren't enough of us to go around. Everybody knows a gay person. Everybody. You know? But not everybody knows a trans person. And I think that is one of our biggest issues. Is we need to, like Mara was saying, and I hope she's correct, that you know, that we're going to see something, at least in terms of a hearing in the Senate on ENDA. You know, because part of the problem was the last time we had a hearing on ENDA in the Senate, they didn't have any transgender people speaking. And that wasn't because of Senator Harkin, who was chairing that committee. It was because of the aides, because of the staffers. They just wouldn't allow it. They said, well, we're not doing that, which is nonsense. It's like having a feature about black people and not having any blacks on it, you know, like MSNBC does with Ed Schultz. But actually, by the way, have you noticed that they were going to have this thing, this feature on Black America on MSNBC, hosted by middle-aged white guy Ed Schultz? And I think they took a lot of flack over that, because all of a sudden, over the last couple of days, they said, with featuring the Reverend Al Sharpton, you know, they must have called him and said, please, please, please come in, because we have no credibility on this. Nobody's going to watch it, because nobody's going to listen to a middle-aged white guy talk about black issues, which, frankly, he says it should be. Just like a middle-aged white guy who makes a multi-million dollars every year, you know, has no credibility talking about union busting, you know. Or, you know, when he, you know, it's not surprising when the guy, you know, claims he speaks for the little guy, but yet never speaks about the unemployed. Well, because, you know, the unemployed aren't going to patronize his sponsors as much as the demographics would like him to, you know. So, you know, I think there's an inherent inconsistency there. There's an inherent hypocrisy there. And I think people are starting to catch up to that. I think people are starting to realize that, you know what, commercial media is not there to be a public service, okay? MSNBC is not doing what they do to provide you with news or to provide you with relevant voices. They're there to make money. That's what they do. And that is why they are inherently less credible than, well, somebody like me. I don't make a nickel off of this. Mike doesn't make a nickel off of this. When you read the blogs, those folks don't make a nickel off of this. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that everything that you hear on the radio or everything that you read on a blog is inherently more credible because it appears on a non-commercial show or because it appears on a blog where the person writing it is not making any money.
And yet, I am a middle-aged white guy, strangely enough. I should be doing better.
But it's the truth. Nobody's paying me to do this. You know, I've made some money as a freelancer. I've written some articles. I was actually the transgender columnist for a Delaware newspaper, Rehoboth Beach Gazette, and EXP Magazine, and, you know, a couple other places that it appeared. You know, I did that for a year. I made money doing that. I've also sold a couple of articles here and there to the Washington Blade. But I've never made a nickel off of this show, ever. Throughout the entire time I have ever been doing radio, I have never made a dime doing this. And believe me, I would love to. Believe me. It's not for lack of trying, I can tell you that.
Would be nice.
Would be nice, yeah. But I don't. And so because I don't, I have nobody I'm beholden to except myself and Mike and you guys. My impetus here, my goal here is to do a good show, to do what I can, to tell you what I think, to give you news, to bring on people who are interesting and important and who could speak well to the issues that concern us as a community. That's my motivation. Okay, I don't have any sponsors who influence or dictate what I put on the air because there's no money passing hands. It's only going out. It's not coming in, you know, and so because of that, you know, am I inherently more credible? I don't know. That's up for you. You get to decide that, not me. Okay, I can tell you what I think. You're the one who gets to decide whether it's credible or not. And that's why it's up to you, as a listener, as a reader, as somebody who follows this media, to be a discerning customer. And I use the word customer advisedly, because again, there's no money changing hands here. But you have to decide for yourself whether you think that what I'm saying is valid or anybody else that you read or hear or see or whatever. It's up to you to put a value on that. I can tell you what I think. But it's up to you to decide whether that works for you. And it's also up to you, if you've got a differing opinion, we do this all the time, and I'm gonna give it to you again. I'm gonna give it to you once more. 928-277-4921. If you have a problem with something I say, or if you just got something to add to the conversation, okay, we have a phone line for a reason. It's 928-277-4921. Call in. Tell us what you're thinking. Add your voice to the conversation. That's what this is about. It's about me. It's about you. It's about Mr. Mike. It's about all of us. It's about having a voice that speaks to, for, and about us. It's not about making sure that sponsors are making money. It's not about making sure that networks are happy. It's not about maximizing profits or fitting into demographics. It's not about any of that stuff. It's about doing what needs to be done. It's about filling a gap that if we, and by we, I mean me, I mean Ethan, I mean Bellerico, I mean Pam's, I mean, you know, all the blogs, all the media, you know, it's about talking about the issues and having the discussions that won't be heard and won't be had unless we have them, unless we have them. And it can't be a one-way thing. I can have Mara Kiesling call in, and she can tell you what you think, what she thinks. But it's up to you to participate, just like it's up to you on voting day, on election day, to go to the polls and to vote and to hear your voice and to get off your ass when it's required and to go protest and to go lobby and to go do all those things. It's up to you, because they call it a participatory democracy for a reason. And in order to have a participatory democracy, you have to participate. That's how it works. And so I say to you, if you want a voice, you can't have one unless you take it, unless you speak, unless you use that voice to tell people what you think. And that's what I'm trying to do here. You know, because I got a big mouth, I got a lot to say. I got a microphone. I've got an amazing producer who helps me not sound like an idiot. And so, you know, I'm able to do stuff like this. And, you know, we've got Ethan St. Pierre who has an amazing show.
You know, it's true. I feel I open my mouth on this show and my IQ goes down by 30 points. It's terrible. It's just the panic. It's a panic situation.
Well, I would disagree with you there, Mr. Mike, because I think you are a valuable part of this show and this team. And, you know, because, again, it also comes down to it's not all about trans. It's not all about gay. It's not all about lesbian. It's not all about bi. It's not all about anything. It's about all of us as Americans. It's about the kind of country that we want to live in. You know, it's about the kind of country that we were taught about, that we said that we had, that when we were kids and we were in school and our teachers told us this is the freest nation on earth. It's about making that not just rhetoric, but making it real. Because the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, we do not live in the freest nation on earth. We don't. Not if you're LGBT, that's for sure. Okay, Europe has long since passed us. You got more rights in England, you've got more rights in the Netherlands, you've got more rights in France, you've got more rights in pretty much all of Europe.
Canada is light years ahead of us.
Absolutely, although they're having some trouble getting a trans rights law passed up there. But generally speaking, yeah, they have more rights than we do too. We are most certainly not the freest nation on earth. That is for sure. We may be the richest nation on earth. We may have the best military. We may have more money than anyone else.
I think we're the most propagandized nation on earth by professionals.
I don't know about that.
No, I'm talking about Fox News and the radio hate talkers. They do a tremendous job.
Right, but don't forget also, we do have an open media, whereas in a lot of countries don't have that. They don't have state media, and that's it. And, you know, the state media is all propaganda. Look at Libya. Look at Iran, Iraq, a lot of the Middle Eastern countries. Basically, their media is just a propaganda stream that's pro-government.
All right, well, compared to that, it's better.
Yeah, but that's my point. But in terms of actual civil rights, I mean, for example, did you know? Here's an interesting little tidbit. Did you know that in Iran, okay, if you are a transgender person, if you want to have sex change surgery, you can have it funded for you by the state?
I heard about that.
Yes, and do you know, but here's the interesting part. The reason why this was actually something that was done, it was created in the days of Ayatollah Khomeini. He issued what was called a fatwa, which is a religious order.
Yep.
And the rationale behind this, which is so interesting, I mean, it's not a great rationale, but it's interesting to me, is they see transsexuality, transitioning from one gender to another, as a cure for homosexuality. Hmm. So if you are a trans woman, let's say, and you want to have surgery and you don't want to pay for it, you want the state to pay for it, you just have to tell them you're gay. Oh, I like men. So they'll get you the surgery to turn you into a woman so that you'll no longer be gay, because they see being gay as far worse than being a transsexual, which I think is kind of interesting. You know, I mean, they hate the idea of homosexuality in Iran so much that they're willing to pay thousands and thousands of dollars to transition men into women, and presumably vice versa, just to, quote, cure homosexuality. But I think it's so interesting that they've decided that, or maybe Ayatollah Khomeini decided, that homosexuality is a far worse sin in his particular version of Islam than transsexuality. And isn't that interesting? I mean, I, it's hard for me to put a value judge. I don't think anybody should be putting those kind of value judgments on anything. But when you're a religious leader, I guess that's your job, is to put value judgments on moral issues. And apparently Ayatollah Khomeini, for whatever reason, decided that homosexuality was a far worse sin that should be cured, quote, cured, by transitioning men into women. I find that so bizarre. I really do. I'm not gonna make a judgment here. But I think it's interesting. I think it's important that we make the point. The United States of America is not the most free nation on earth. And we certainly do not live up to the values that we say we hold dear. Remember that part, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all? I'd like to know when we get to that part, with the liberty and justice for all part, because I'm not seeing it. You know, liberty and justice for all if you happen to be straight. But, that's what I see, is I see liberty, and, for the rest of us, we have to fight for it. And we can't even depend on the media to do it, because they're more what they care about, and could bring in this all the way back to where we started at the beginning of this show. They're not there to promote progressivism. They're not there to promote liberalism. They're not there to be political leaders for liberalism, for liberal values, for progressive values. They may claim that they are, but it's not. They're there to generate as much cold, hard cash as humanly possible. And if you need an example, we can just go right back to Glenn Beck.
So I watch it. This is the worst television ever done. We're doing it every day. Congratulations.
Because Glenn Beck can draw viewers, but if you can't draw sponsors, you're going to be off the air. And that's why I say, watch, mark my words. Glenn Beck is going to go off. He's going to stop doing his show, and he's going to go and do all of his stuff. He'll probably keep doing his radio show, and he'll probably do something that's internet-based. And you'll pay. You know, you'll pay a subscription fee to go and listen to your Glenn Beck. And those who really are dedicated, true fans, and he's got, I mean, you know, I'm not denigrating. He's got an audience. He's got an audience I would kill for. Not those individuals, but I mean, in terms of size, you know, he's got a substantial audience. And a substantial portion of that audience is going to be willing to blow a few bucks. And so that's what I think you're going to see. I think you're going to see Glenn Beck take his, what he does, and put it online. And that's where I think he's going to go. And you know what? I think he'll do quite well, because he appeals directly to a certain segment. And, you know, more power to him. I mean, you know, I wish I could monetize what I do the way he does. I mean, I'd love to be making $32 million a year, wouldn't you, Mr. Mike? You know?
Only a million. $500,000. I'll cap it at $500,000. Just like most CEOs should cap it at $500,000.
I also want to remind people that after your show, if you missed the beginning of the show, my opening rant, the Mara Kiesling interview, that's all going to be coming up. We'll be replaying that right after the show. Give about 5 minutes worth of music or so.
And God then, willing.
God Goddess. Willing, and the creek don't rise.
Goddess okay. willing.
Of course, with this show, you never know.
we deal with the natural elements all the time.
It's always an adventure on the Rebecca Juro show.
You know, living in northern Arizona is really weird. It is like we're just now getting the comforts of the 20th century in here, and so they don't work very well sometimes. So the internet service here can be a little bit strange. We soldier on anyway, and we will continue no matter who is inconvenienced. We don't care. you should hear me on the line with some of the CSRs at the internet providers that we've been dealing with. Oh dear, I'm such a bastard.
Well, you know, as long as we get this show on the air, it's always, you know, I mean, we work for it. You know, I mean, these folks. That's the other thing. You know, MSNBC, they never have to worry about their technological backbone like we do. You know, we work for this. We make sure. I mean, it's an effort to get this show on the air every week, and you know, we don't have. The technological backbone of an MSNBC or, you know, a commercial venture, but we do what we can, and we do what we can as we can, and you know, I mean, there was a reason we were off the air for 2 years, but now we're back, and hopefully we're going to stay back on the air every week and keep doing this because we love it and because we know that you're out there and you're listening, and that's really what's most important, is that you're out there, that you're listening, and that you think for yourself. And that's about it. So we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting this media. We will see you next week. Check Facebook to find out who the guest is. Good night.
Bye.